It's apparently fairly rare, Luke said. All I really know about it is that it shuts down lightsabers. Corrin and I ran into some Force users once who made sets of body armor out of woven Cortosis fibers. It was quite a surprise. I'll bet, Mara said, a memory of her own drifting up. So that's what the slab of rock was Palpatine had between the double walls of his private residence. Luke lifted an eyebrow. He had Cortosis ore around his residence? And around some of his other offices and throne rooms, too, I think, Mara said. I never knew the proper name for the stuff. From what he told me, I gather that if your lightsaber has Demetris circuits anywhere in the activation loop, hitting the rock starts a feedback crash running through the system that takes only a fraction of a second to shut the whole thing down. A little something extra to slow down any stray Jedi who might come after him. The things you learn as Emperor's Hand, Luke murmured. Do you know if there's any way to cut it? Oh, sure. Hundreds of them, Mara assured him, slipping her pack onto the ground. Aside from the lightsaber thing, the stuff's basically useless. It's too weak and crumbly to build with. A good blaster carbine bolt will shatter it. Let me see. Ah. She pulled out one of the grenades Card had sent and shined her glow rod on the yield number. Yes. This ought to work if you want to try it.
One of the Quam Ja put in another comment.
Keeper of Promises thinks grenades would be a bad idea, Luke translated. He says we're not that far from the High Tower itself, and that sound carries pretty far underground. He's probably right, Mara conceded, putting the grenade away and studying the rock where Luke had been cutting. On the other hand, you're only getting a few centimeters at a time this way. Extra noise or extra delay? Your pick.
Luke ran a hand thoughtfully across the rock, and Mara could sense his concentration as he stretched out to the Force.
Let's try it with lightsabers for a while, he suggested slowly. At least a couple of hours. That should give us a better estimate of how long it's actually going to take.
Fine, Mara said. We can always switch to the grenades if we decide it's going too slow.
She played her glow rod over the rock.
So along with caverns full of predators, we now have a wall that blocks lightsabers. How convenient for someone.
It could be just coincidence, Luke said, but he didn't sound like he believed it. Well, there's nothing for it but to get started. He frowned suddenly. Unless you think this might damage the lightsabers.
Mara shrugged.
I can't see how it would, but I really don't know. Hopefully we'll be able to pick up any trouble before it gets too bad.
True, Luke agreed,
looking down at his astromech droid.
R2, full sensors, and keep an eye on the lightsabers. Let us know if they seem to be overheating or anything.
The droid beeped acknowledgement and extended his little sensor unit.
We probably should start this as a triangle, Mara suggested,
crossing the passageway and wedging her glow rod into a crevice where it would illuminate the area beneath the Quam Ja sneak hole.
Carving down at an angle on opposite sides. That should keep our blades out of each other's way, and angled cuts are usually better at weakening the underlying rock.
Sounds good.
Luke looked up at the three Quam Ja grouped close together on the ceiling.
Splitter of Stones, why don't you head back to Eater of Fire Creepers? Tell him we're almost ready for the extra scouts he promised to send into the High Tower with us.
The Quam Ja said something.
No, but we will be soon, Luke said. And you'd better take one of the others with you.
Sitting on a lump of stone beneath the archway, Child of Winds flapped his wings and said something that sounded eager.
No, not you,
Luke told the Quam Quay firmly.
Keeper of Promises, you go with him.
There was a brief comment from the Quam Ja that sounded vaguely condescending, and then Splitter of Stones and Keeper of Promises dropped off their perches and flapped off back into the darkness toward the cave entrance. Child of Winds fired off a sarcastic-sounding shot as they left, then settled huffily back onto his rock.
I'll bet I'm missing some really witty repartee here,
Mara said sourly, pulling her lightsaber from her belt and taking up position to the left of the cut Luke had started.
"Not really," Luke said, igniting his lightsaber and moving to the opposite side. "You ready?"
Mara ignited her lightsaber.
"Let's do it."
They'd been at it for nearly an hour and had completed the outline for their opening. Then R2 suddenly squealed. "Hold it, Mara," Luke called, closing down his lightsaber and wondering briefly what was wrong. He'd been concentrating closely on the weapon and hadn't felt even a hint of any problem with it. He glanced over at R2 and paused for a closer look. The droid's sensor unit was extended, but it wasn't aimed at the lightsabers. It was instead pointed down the passageway ahead. "Mara," he called, shifting the weapon to his left hand and pulling out his glow rod. He played it down the tunnel as, behind him, Mara shut down her lightsaber. And in the sudden silence, he heard a noise, a rustling sound, like thousands of distant, throaty voices whispering wordlessly to each other. A mindless rumbling that was echoed in his mind as he stretched out toward it with the Force. And it was getting closer.
"I don't like the sound of that,"
Mara murmured, stepping to his side.
"Me neither," Luke said,
keying his glow rod to its brightest setting and sweeping it around again. Nothing was visible, but the way the tunnel twisted and bent in both directions, that didn't mean much. He ran through his Jedi sense enhancement techniques.
"Fire creepers!"
Builder with Vines said excitedly from the ceiling behind him.
"They are coming!"
"What?"
Mara demanded.
"He said fire creepers are coming," Luke relayed.
"Uh-oh,"
Mara said.
"They're Bargainer's name, Eater of Fire Creepers."
"Yes," Luke said, looking up at the Quamsha. His wings were fluttering with some kind of anticipation.
"I've been assuming a fire creeper was some sort of plant. Builder with Vines, what are these things?"
"They are small but dangerous creatures,"
the Quamsha said.
"They will eat and destroy all things in their path and can kill anything they find."
"He says small but dangerous," Luke told Mara, sweeping the glow rod down the tunnel again.
"In which case that much noise implies there must be one blazing lot of them on the way,"
Mara concluded grimly, looking around.
"I get the very bad feeling we're about to meet a new species of Rovereens."
Luke shivered. He'd seen holovids of those infamous insect predators on their annual march across the Deverian jungles. Rovereens traveled in swarms of hundreds of thousands, sometimes even millions, literally stripping the landscape of every bit of plant life as they passed over it. Plant life and any animals that were too slow or too sick to get out of their way, eating such stragglers down to polished bone.
"Builder with Vines, how fast do they travel?" he called.
"Too fast,"
Mara snapped before the Quamsha could answer.
"Look, here they come."
Luke caught his breath. Ahead, just at the farthest spot the glow rod beam could reach, the front edge of a pulsating sheet of black had appeared, filling the entire floor and spilling perhaps a meter up the walls as well. Even as he watched, the edge flowed like some viscous liquid into a slight dip in the floor, reappearing as it flowed up again over the lip. And Mara was right. They were coming far too fast.
"I'd say we've got maybe a minute before they get here," Mara said. "If you've got any clever tricks up your sleeve, this is the time to trot them out."
Luke bit at his lip, his mind racing. There was a way, he knew, to use the Force to create a low-level personal shield. But to maintain the shield long enough, especially against so many individual adversaries, would be practically impossible. Besides, it was doubtful he could also shield Mara that way, and she almost certainly didn't know the technique herself. Using the Force to move each individual fire creeper out of the way as they passed would be an equally impossible task, even with Mara working alongside of him.
And if these insects were anything like Deverian Roverines, it would only take one of them getting through and sinking a poisoned stinger to shake their control and alert the rest of the swarm to the presence of food. No, their only hope was to stay out of the fire creeper's way entirely. Either somewhere farther down the tunnel, or else...
The archway! Mara said suddenly. We'll need footrests about 2 meters up.
Right, Luke said, igniting his lightsaber and stepping into the opening as he measured the distance with his eyes. Yes, it would just work. Assuming they had enough time to make the necessary preparations.
R2, close down all your openings. He called as he swung the tip of the brilliant green blade horizontally into the inner edge of the archway's side pillar, half a meter above his head. If the Cortosasaur extended this far out from the passageway wall... Oh, fortunately it didn't. His lightsaber blade sliced cleanly inward a few centimeters into the rock, without a hint of trouble. Child of Winds, get to that opening up there, he called, as he got a force grip on the lightsaber and lifted it up to the rock over the cut he'd just made. Find a place to hang on and stay there.
What about you, Jedi Skywalker?
The young Quam Quay asked anxiously, the fluttering of his wings nearly drowned out by the hum of the two lightsabers.
How will you protect yourselves?
You'll see, Luke assured him. He brought the lightsaber blade down at a not-quite-vertical angle, slicing out a rough wedge of stone and leaving behind a shallow horizontal ledge in the inner edge of the archway. The rustling of the approaching fire creepers was growing steadily louder.
Mara? I'm finished!
Mara called over the noise, the blue-white glow reflected from behind him vanishing as she shut down her lightsaber.
We've got maybe 20 seconds!
Luke looked down the tunnel as he pulled his lightsaber back to his hand. The leading edge of the swarm was barely 5 meters away, the entire passageway behind them absolutely black with the insects.
I'm ready, he told her, shutting down the weapon and returning it to his belt. On three? On three,
Mara said. Luke took half a step backward, and for a moment his back pressed against Mara's as they each gauged the distances and stretched out in their own ways to the force.
On three,
Luke repeated, trying to ignore the sound that seemed to fill the entire passageway. Across by one wall, R2 moaned with fear.
One, two, three!
He jumped upward toward his footrest, turning his body halfway around as he did so, and hoping belatedly that the arc of his leap wouldn't be high enough to crack his head against the curved rock above him. As he came around to face the center of the archway, he caught sight of Mara, also in midair with her back to the rock, starting to come down toward her own newly carved footrest. Her arms were stretched toward him, palms outward, as if she were reaching out to push him away. Luke got his own arms up, palms similarly outward, as their heels came thunking solidly down onto their footrests. Their palms met, their fingers intertwined. Mara took a deep breath, exhaling it in a rush just audible above the noise of the fire creepers now swarming through the passageway beneath their feet.
I'll be castled, she said. It worked.
Luke nodded, taking a deep breath of his own. With their feet resting on the cutouts they'd made, their arms stretched rigidly out, their hands clasped to brace and support one another, they had in effect become a living archway within the stone one. And as long as they stayed that way, they would remain safe above the flow of insects. But if either one of them fell...
Cozy, isn't it?
Mara commented, looking around.
Very symbolic, too. The great and powerful Jedi Master forced to rely on someone else for his survival.
I wish you'd drop that, Luke growled. I've already admitted I can't do everything.
Which isn't quite the same as relying on other people,
Mara said.
But okay, consider it dropped. Looks like we're just high enough.
Luke looked down. The river of fire creepers, as he'd already seen, sloshed a fair distance up the walls of the passageway as too many insects tried to travel through too small a space. Here at the archway, where the tunnel was still narrower,
They roved even higher, with some of the insects passing barely centimeters beneath their footrests.
"You think they can eat through our boots?" he asked.
"If enough of them climb aboard and start chewing, they can probably eat through anything," Mara said. "And all it'll take will be one of them noticing us to wave whatever chemical flags they use to whistle up the rest of the swarm."
Luke nodded grimly. "So in other words, if any of them look like they're getting close, grab them with the force and get rid of them fast."
"Better still, throw them across the cave into a wall," Mara said. "What I'd like to know is what they're doing down here. There can't possibly be enough food in this entire cavern complex for a swarm this size."
"Maybe it's a shortcut from one part of the surface to another," Luke suggested. "There's that underground river we passed a ways back. Maybe they come here for the water."
"Could be," Mara said, peering to the side. "I wish we'd had time to move our packs up off... What, in space?"
Luke followed her gaze just in time to see Builder with Vine swoop down in a shallow dive over the scurrying fire creepers and curve up again with what appeared to be some of the insects in his mouth.
"He's eating them," he said, not quite believing it.
"Of course he is," Mara said. "Eater of fire creepers, remember?"
"But then..."
Luke floundered, thoroughly confused now.
"Are they really not that dangerous?"
"Of course they're dangerous," Mara snorted. "You ever hear of the top shot in any clan who picked a name that made him sound calm and reasonable? This has to be the Quam Ja version of Kick the Rancor."
"Kick the Rancor?"
"A slang term in Palpatine's court," Mara said. "Any stupid stunt where the wrists were way out of proportion to the game."
Luke worked moisture into a suddenly dry mouth as he watched Builder with Vines finish his snack and swoop down for another pass. Why in the name of the Force was he taking such a terrible risk? And it was a terrible risk. Luke could feel the danger involved, his Jedi senses tingling almost as strongly as if the threat had been aimed directly at him. Surely Builder with Vines couldn't be that hungry, could he?
"Offhand, I'd say he's showing off,"
Mara muttered, answering his silent question.
"For who? Us?"
"Hardly."
Mara nodded toward the wall behind Luke.
"For the kid."
Luke craned his neck to look. Balanced precariously on a stone near the Quam Ja opening, Child of Winds was watching with utter fascination as Builder with Vines swooped over the mass of insects, his wings quivering with excitement or nervousness or envy.
"Uh-oh," Luke said. "You don't think..."
"I would hope he's not that stupid," Mara said. "But the Quam Ja have been riding him ever since we headed out on this little trip. He just might."
Luke grimaced.
"Child of Winds, you stay where you are," he ordered, putting Jedi firmness into his voice. "You're not to try to do what Builder with Vines is..."
And suddenly, a terrified shriek screamed through his mind.
"What?"
he gasped, his body twitching violently with the shock of the sound.
"It's Builder with Vines,"
Mara bit out, her fingers tightening around Luke's to help maintain their balance. Luke looked down to a horrifying sight. Builder with Vines, his wings flapping frantically but uselessly, was struggling half-submerged in the living river flowing through the passageway. Dozens of fire creepers were already crawling across his head and wings, biting and stinging. Even as Child of Wind's terrified cry joined Builder with Vines' scream in Luke's mind, 100 more of the insects crawled onto the Quam Ja, their weight forcing him still deeper beneath the flow. There was no time to waste. Stretching out with the Force, Luke hauled Builder with Vines up and out of the flow, holding him suspended in midair. He shifted his focus to the insects grabbing them through the Force and throwing them off him.
"Don't bother," Mara said quietly. "There's nothing you can do."
Luke bit back the reflexive impulse to deny it.
He was a Jedi. There had to be something he could do.
But no, she was right. And as Builder with Vines' mental scream died into the silence of death, he let the body sink gently back into the mindless flow.
easy on the fingers,
Mara said softly. With an effort, Luke turned his gaze back to her, focusing on their joined hands. His fingers were all but white where he was squeezing hers tightly in frustration. Sorry, he muttered, forcing himself to relax his grip.
It's all right,
she said.
You know you've got a pretty good grip there. I thought you Jedi usually concentrated more on the mental aspects of the Force than you did in keeping in shape.
She was trying to deflect his attention, he knew, trying to turn his thoughts away from the horror he'd just witnessed. Sympathy from Mara was a new experience all by itself. But neither words nor sympathy had a puddle's chance of smoothing over the guilt and anger rising in his throat like a twisting sand devil.
It's not all right, he snapped back at her. I knew it was dangerous. I could have stopped him. I should have stopped him.
How? Mara countered.
I mean, sure, you could have used the Force to pin him to the ceiling. But what right would you have had to do something like that?
What do you mean, what right? Luke bit out.
I was the one in charge here. Their safety was my responsibility.
Oh, come on,
Mara said. The sympathy still there, but with a tinge of scorn around the edges now.
Builder with Vines was an intelligent, reasonable adult being. He knew what he was doing. He made his choice, and he suffered the consequences. If you want to start feeling guilty about mistakes, start with ones that were actually your fault.
Such as?
Luke growled. For a long moment, Mara gazed coolly at him, and Luke felt a sudden wave of misgiving rippling through his anger.
Such as?
Mara repeated.
Well, let's see. Such as not moving your Jedi Academy off Yavin when you first found out a really nasty dark side power was infesting the place. Such as not slapping down a tipped turbo laser like Kip Duran the minute he started showing dark side tendencies of his own. Such as not providing adequate protection for your sister's children against kidnapping, despite the fact it had already been tried a couple of times. Such as unilaterally declaring yourself a Jedi Master after less than 10 years on the job. How long a list do you want?
Luke tried to glare at her, but there was no strength behind the glare. And with a grimace of embarrassment, he dropped his gaze from her face.
You're right, he sighed. You're absolutely right. I don't know, Mara. It's been... I don't know.
Let me guess,
she said, the sarcasm gone from her voice again.
Life as a Jedi has been a lot foggier than you ever expected it to be. You've had trouble understanding what you're supposed to do or how you're supposed to behave. You've been gaining tremendous power in the Force, but more often than not, you've been paralyzed with fear that you're going to use it the wrong way. Am I getting warm?
Luke stared at her.
Yes,
he said, not quite believing it.
How had she known?
That's it exactly.
And yet,
she continued,
sometime in the past couple of months, things have suddenly become clearer. Not that you've had any great lightning bolt insights, but a lot of the hesitation has disappeared, and you found it easier to stay on what seems in hindsight to have been the right path.
Right again, Luke said, though there have also been one or two pretty impressive revelations,
he added, thinking back.
The vision on Tearfawn that got me in touch with Carr just in time to hear about you being trapped here for one.
He eyed her closely.
You know what's been going on?
Yes. It's been only slightly more visible than blindingly obvious,
she said dryly.
Certainly to me. Probably to Leia and Corrin and some of the other Jedi students, too. Possibly to everyone else in the New Republic.
Oh, thank you,
Luke said, trying to match her tone and not entirely succeeding.
That makes me feel so much better.
Good. And was supposed to.
Mara took a deep breath, and Luke could sense her reluctance.
Look, you're the one in the middle of this. You're the one who has to make the final call on what's going on. But if you want my reading, it all started with that little jaunt you took out to Biss about 9 years ago, where you faced whatever it was you faced out there.
Luke shivered. The reborn Emperor. Or whatever, Mara said with an odd touch of impatience. Personally, I'm not convinced it was really him. But that's beside the point. The point was that you decided, stupidly and rather arrogantly in my opinion, that the best way to stop him would be for you to pretend to join up and let him teach you some of his dark side techniques. But I didn't really go over to the dark side, Luke protested, trying to remember those dark days. I mean, I don't think I did. Mara shook her head.
Debatable. But it almost doesn't matter. One way or the other, you still willingly dabbled in it. And from that point on, it colored everything you did.
One of Master Yoda's pronouncements floated up from his memory.
If once you start down the dark path,
his old teacher had warned,
forever will it dominate your destiny.
It did too, didn't it? He murmured, half to himself, as all the errors and mistakes, and yes, the arrogance of the past 9 years, rose accusingly before his eyes. What was I thinking?
You weren't thinking,
Mara said, an odd mixture of impatience and compassion swirling together in her voice and emotions.
You were reacting, trying to save everyone and do everything. And in the process, you came within a split blaster bolt of destroying yourself.
So what changed? He asked.
What happened?
Mara's eyes narrowed fractionally.
You telling me you don't know?
Luke grimaced, wondering that he hadn't seen it earlier. That critical moment off Iphigen, as he and Han had prepared for combat against that pirate gang Han had deduced was on its way. The moment when he'd seen the vision of Emperor Palpatine and Exar Kun laughing at him.
No, I know, he conceded. I made a decision to stop using the power of the Force so much. And suddenly, through that mixture of compassion and impatience, came a wave of something completely unexpected. An overpowering flood of relief.
You got it,
Mara said quietly.
Finally.
Luke shook his head.
But why?
He demanded.
The power's obviously there, available for a Jedi to use. Is it just because I touched the dark side that using it is so bad for me?
That's probably part of it, Mara said.
But even if you'd never done that, you'd still have run into trouble. You ever been in a hull plate shaping plant?
No, Luke said, blinking at the sudden change of topic.
How about an ore crushing facility? She suggested. Lando's had a couple of them at one time or another. You must have visited at least one of them.
I've seen the one on Varn, yes, Luke said, the mention of Lando's name throwing a sudden damper on the cautiously growing feeling of excitement at these new revelations. Mara's relationship with Lando.
Fine,
Mara said, either missing the change in Luke's emotions or else ignoring it.
Sometimes small songbirds set up their nests in the upper supports of those buildings. Did you hear any of them singing when you were there?
Luke smiled tightly. Again, it was so obvious.
Of course not, he said. It was way too noisy in there to hear anything that quiet.
Mara smiled back.
Pretty obvious, isn't it? Once you see it. The Force isn't just about power, like most non-Jedi think. It's also about guidance. Everything from those impressive future visions to the more subtle real-time warnings I sometimes think of as a danger sense. Trouble is, the more you tap into it for raw power, the less you're able to hear its guidance over the noise of your own activity.
Yes, Luke murmured. So many puzzles suddenly coming clear. He'd often wondered how it was he could rebuild Darth Vader's personal fortress while Master Yoda had become winded doing something as relatively simple as lifting an X-Wing from the Dagobah swamp. Clearly Yoda had understood the choices far better than his upstart pupil. And even in the short time since Luke had decided to try that same choice, he'd already seen glimpses of why Yoda had chosen that path. Subtle bits of guidance,
sometimes occurring as little more than vague and almost subconscious feelings, had been showing up more and more, protecting him from a quick capture back at the Kavrloo Pirates' asteroid base, or quietly prompting him to accept Child of Winds' assistance, which had led directly to this cavern and the pride-motivated aid of the Kwamja.
"I was on Iphigen a couple of months ago, helping Han with some negotiations," he said. "The Diamala at the talks told Han that Jedi who used as much power as I did always ended up slipping over to the dark side."
"They may be right," Mara agreed. "Not all dark Jedi come from botched training, you know. Some of them slip into it all by themselves."
"Not a very pleasant thought,"
Luke said soberly, thinking about his Yavin Academy, of his successes at Jedi instruction there, and his failures. "Especially given that I started teaching under dark side influence."
"Yes, I noticed that too," Mara agreed. "Possibly one of the major reasons you didn't do very well with that first batch of students."
Luke made a face. "Is that why you didn't stay?"
"That and the changes I saw in you," she said. "You didn't seem interested in listening to any warnings about what you were doing. And I decided that when it collapsed around you, it wouldn't do either of us any good if I got caught in the rubble, too."
She shrugged.
"Anyway, Corrin was there, and he seemed to have his head bolted on straight."
"He wasn't there very long, though," Luke murmured.
"Yes, I found that out afterward. Pity."
For a moment, neither of them said anything. Luke craned his neck to peer to the side, wondering if the end of the fire creeper swarm was visible yet. This introspection was both embarrassing and painful. And besides, they had urgent work to do. But the black carpet still stretched as far as the passageway's turns and irregularities permitted him to see.
"What about you?"
he asked, turning back to Mara again.
"You were the Emperor's hand. Why hasn't your life been dominated by the dark side?"
She shrugged uncomfortably.
"Maybe it has. It certainly was from the time Palpatine took me from my home till I got rid of that last command he jammed into my mind."
Her gaze clouded over, oddly, as if she were looking into some private place within herself.
"Though it's funny somehow. Palpatine never really tried to turn me to the dark side. At least not the way he turned Vader and tried to turn you. Actually, I don't think I was ever really in the dark side at all."
"But everything you were doing was the Emperor's work," Luke said. "If he was on the dark side, shouldn't you have been too?"
Mara shook her head.
"I don't know,"
she admitted.
"But I wasn't."
Her gaze came back, and Luke could sense the protective barrier going up again, as if she'd suddenly realized her private feelings had been a little too visible.
"You're the Jedi Master. You figure it out."
"I'll work on it,"
Luke promised. Yes, the barriers were back up, but not as high as they'd once been. Not nearly as high.
"In the meantime," she said, "do those sustained control techniques you taught me work on our muscles as well as lightsabers?"
Luke focused on her arms, noticing for the first time that they were trembling slightly with muscle fatigue.
"They do okay," he said. "But for muscles, there's a better technique. Let me show you."
It was another hour before the swarm of fire creepers finally finished its migration beneath them and disappeared down the cavern passageway. In their wake, they left R2 and everything metal or otherwise indigestible from their packs, though the packs themselves had vanished. And of course, Builder with Vines' remains. Mara glanced once at the scattered bones, then firmly turned her eyes away. Yes, it was the Kwamja's own fault that he'd gotten himself killed. And yes, on one level it was merely the balance of nature at work. And yes, she tried her best to keep Luke from taking any of the blame on himself. But none of that meant she had to like what had happened, or wanted to look at the results.
"Good thing the food bars were in metal boxes,"
she commented, massaging her fingers as she prodded what was left of their equipment with the tip of her boot.
The water bottles didn't hold up nearly as well, though.
There's plenty of water down here, Luke reminded her. He was standing near their cut, looking up at Child of Winds.
We just won't be able to carry extra supplies with us. It's all safe now, Child of Winds. You can come down.
The young Quam Quay didn't budge. That almost voice going again.
I understand, Luke said gently. But you have to come down. You're in the way up there, and we don't want to hit you with our lightsabers.
For a moment, Mara thought Child of Winds would decide he preferred to stay up off the floor and take his chances with the lightsabers. Then, with clear reluctance, he spread his wings and fluttered down to a slightly awkward perch on top of the droid's dome.
What now?
Mara asked, crossing to Luke's side.
Back to hack and slash?
Luke shrugged. The wall's not going to fall apart on its own, he said. Unless you think we ought to risk using the grenades. Mara peered down the passageway. Nothing was visible, but after that fire creeper swarm, she was feeling a little spooked herself.
Let's stick with the lightsabers for now, she suggested. If Splitter of Stones gets back with the reinforcements before we're finished, we'll consider it.
Sounds good,
Luke agreed, pulling his lightsaber from his belt and igniting it.
R2, keep an eye out for any more trouble.
The droid warbled a slightly nervous acknowledgement and extended his sensor unit again, nearly knocking Child of Winds off his perch as he did so.
Okay, Luke said, taking his position to the side of their cut again. Let's get started.
Right,
Mara said, igniting her own lightsaber. Luke's lightsaber slashed and died. Mara's followed similarly. And that, she realized, was that. They'd had the conversation she'd known was coming and had been dreading since he first arrived here. And while he'd obviously not exactly been thrilled by the realization of how badly he'd wrecked the past few years, he'd taken the news better than she'd expected him to. The question now was what he would do with his newfound knowledge. Whether he would take it solidly to heart and commit to what he now knew was right, or whether the lure of power and quick solutions would eventually drag him back to the easy path, the dark path. She would just have to wait and see.
Chapter 16.
From behind him came the sound of an opening door, and Han turned his head to see Lando step into the Lady Luck's bridge.
Okay, it's done, the other announced,
his tone tense and decidedly grumpy.
Everything's been shut down to standby. Engine, sensors, computer system, the works.
He crossed the bridge and dropped into the pilot's seat beside Han.
And I'd like to go on record right now as saying I hate this.
I'm not exactly happy about it myself,
Han had to admit.
But this is the way it has to be.
Lando snorted.
Says a self-admitted Imperial clone TIE pilot, he added accusingly. You know, Han, I've done some crazy things in my time, but this one takes the prize.
Han grimaced, gazing out at the stars. It was crazy, all right. Somewhere out there, a hyperspace micro-jump away, was an Imperial ubiquitous contact station, with all the security and firepower and just plain nastiness that that implied. And here they were, probably well within its defensive perimeter, sitting around like a belly-up gaunt, with their systems cranked way back to keep from being too visible to any auto-rovers the station might have out wandering the area. Waiting for an Imperial clone to come back and tell them where in the shrunken empire the capital of Bastion was located.
Leia said he was all right,
he told Lando.
She said he was sincere and not planning to betray you,
Lando corrected darkly.
She didn't say he was a competent enough liar to pull this whole thing off, especially not in front of some congenitally suspicious ubiquitous agent.
Han eyed him.
You don't like clones, do you?
Lando snorted again.
No, I don't, he said flatly. Palpatine may have talked about alien species as being subhuman, but clones are really down there.
For a minute, the bridge was silent. Han gazed out at the stars some more, rubbing his fingertips over his blaster grip and trying not to let Lando's nervousness get to him. Leia had agreed to let him come out here, after all, and Leia was a Jedi. Surely she'd have seen or felt or guessed if something bad was going to happen. Wouldn't she?
Tell me about this Baron Fel, Lando said suddenly. I mean the original one. What was he like?
Han shrugged.
Typical Corellian, I suppose. Well, no, actually he wasn't. He was a farm boy, for one thing, who got bribed with an academy appointment to stop him testifying in a legal action against some big agro-combine official's son. We were at Corita together for a while, though I didn't hang around him much. He was an honorable sort, I suppose, even a little stiff-necked about it sometimes, and a pretty fair pilot.
As good as you? Lando asked.
Han smiled tightly.
Better,
he said, a little surprised he was actually admitting that out loud.
At least with something the size of a TIE fighter.
So how did he wind up getting cloned? Lando asked. As I remember the history, he quit the Empire, joined Rogue Squadron, then got recaptured. So the question is, why would anyone clone a guy who had already turned once? I don't care how good a pilot he was.
Leia and I asked Carib the same question on Pakrik Minor, Han said. He told us he didn't know, that it wasn't part of the flash learning they'd been given in the cloning tanks.
Lando grunted.
Look, they would have had to hold him there for 3 or 4 years, minimum, before Thrawn got his cloning tanks up and running, right?
They didn't need all of them, Han murmured. Sabaoth cloned Luke from the hand he lost at Bespin, remember?
Yes, but Luke's hand was one of Palpatine's trophies, Lando pointed out. Why would anyone bother keeping parts of Fel in storage? No one even knew Palpatine had all those cloning tanks hidden away, let alone that Thrawn would show up and get them running again.
Point,
Han conceded.
So they probably kept him alive somewhere.
Right, Lando said. The question is, where?
I don't know, Han said. No one ever found records about him at any of the Imperial prisons or penal colonies we liberated. With his connections to Rogue Squadron, we would have heard if they had.
He hesitated.
The other thing you might not know is that a month or two after his recapture, his wife pulled the same sort of vanishing act.
Lando frowned.
I remember Wedge talking about that once. But you say vanishing. I thought it was the Empire who snatched her.
That's what everyone thought at the time, Han agreed. But once they started sifting through the evidence, it was a lot less clear what had happened. Anyway, no one ever found a trace of her either.
Lando shook his head.
If any of this is supposed to reassure me, it's not. The only way Izzard could have gotten Fel back on the Empire's side would have been to brain twist him. You want to tell me what kind of clone is going to come from that?
Han sighed.
I don't know. All I know is that Leia cleared him.
Lando nodded.
Yeah, sure.
Again, silence descended on the bridge. This time it was Han who broke it.
What are Lobot and Mogit doing back there?
He asked.
They were practicing their slicing techniques before you had me shut the computer down, Lando said, still sounding grumpy. They're probably checking over Mogid's equipment now.
Did you tell them where we were going?
Lando's lips compressed briefly.
I told them we were going into the Empire. I didn't tell them exactly where or why.
Maybe you'd better go do that, Han suggested. Mogit may need to brush up on Imperial computer systems or something.
I don't think Verpine ever have to brush up on anything, Lando said.
But he nevertheless levered himself out of his seat.
Sure, why not? We might as well be all worried together. It's better than sitting around waiting for the hammer to drop, anyway.
Don't worry,
Han called after him as he left the bridge.
It'll work out. Trust me.
There was no response, but the metallic thud of the door as it slid shut behind him. Sighing again, Han turned his attention back to watching for Carib's freighter to return, trying hard not to worry. The ubiquitrate agent seated at his console gazed up at his visitor from under bushy eyebrows.
All right,
he said in a voice that somehow reminded Carib of 1,000 pressure worms scratching their wings against tall grain leaves.
Your ID checks out.
Glad to hear it,
Carib said, trying to put some righteous indignation into his tone. To his ears, though, he sounded merely plaintive.
Does that mean you're finally ready to listen?
The agent leaned back in his seat, regarding Carib coolly.
Sure,
he said.
Provided you're ready to hear a list of charges against you, if this big news of yours isn't as flackin' urgent as you seem to think it is.
He slammed his stylus down on the desk in front of him.
Blast it, Divis! You know you're never supposed to come here yourself! All you people are supposed to know that! Everything you have to report goes through channels! Everything!
Carib remaining standing at attention, listening to the reprimand with half an ear, and waiting with all the patience he could muster for the other to run out of words. The self-generated tirade, he knew, was one of the ubiquitous classic tactics for rattling someone they wanted to be vulnerable. But no, that wasn't something he knew. It was something Baron Suntir Fell had known. Something that had been artificially transferred, along with his piloting skill, to Carib and his brothers. Memories that were not his own, from a person who was not him. And yet, on some level, was indeed him. It was a mind-numbing thought, a painful and depressing blurring of identity that had cost Carib many a sleepless night back on Pakrik Minor, before he'd finally made the conscious decision to bury it as far back at the edge of his mind as he could. And he'd done a fair job of keeping it there, until the long-awaited, long-feared orders had come in from the remnants of the Empire. Could it really have been only 2 weeks ago? Reactivating his Thai combat unit. Then, all the old uncertainties and questions and self-doubts had surged back to the front of his mind. He was a clone. A clone. A clone.
Stop it!
He snarled at the word. I am Carib Devist, husband of Lacey, father of Dabarin and Kina, tall grain farmer of the Dorchess Valley of Pakrik Minor. Where I came from and how I came to be don't matter. I am who I am. He took a careful breath, and as he did so, the doubts once again returned to their uneasy sleep in the deep crevices of his mind. He was Carib Devist. And despite what anyone might say or believe, he was indeed a unique individual. The ubiquitrate agent was starting to wind down now, and with a flicker of private amusement, Carib realized that for once the old intimidation tactic had backfired. Far from unnerving its intended victim, the tirade had instead given him the time he needed to collect his thoughts and his nerve and to prepare for verbal combat.
So, let's hear it,
the agent snarled.
Let's hear this vitally important news of yours.
Yes, sir, Carib said.
There was an Imperial attack on New Republic High Councilor Leia Organa Solo over Pakrik Minor 5 days ago. It failed.
Yes, thank you. We know that,
the agent said sarcastically.
Are you telling me you broke security?
The reason it failed, Carib continued, was because...
I'm talking here, Devist!
The agent snapped.
You broke security for a story we could have pulled off Coruscant hourly!
Was because, Carib went on doggedly, they were assisted.
Will you shut up? I'll have your skin pickled in
by an unknown alien ship.
Carib finished.
A hot slimy...
He broke off.
What do you mean, an unknown alien ship?
He demanded.
I mean, a ship with a completely unknown design,
Kerub said.
It had four outboard panels, like the two on a TIE fighter, but the rest was definitely non-imperial.
For a long moment, the agent measured Kerub with his eyes.
I don't suppose you happen to pull any records of the battle?
He said at last, his tone challenging.
Not of the battle itself,
Kerub said, pulling a data card from his side pouch.
But we did get something off the ship afterward.
The agent held out his hand. Kerub dropped the data card into it, mentally crossing his fingers. Solo had cobbled this thing together during the trip here from a pair of records he and Organa Solo had had with them in their ship. Where they'd gotten the originals, Kerub didn't know. And really didn't care, either. Combat, intrigue, galactic security, none of those were matters he and his brothers wanted anything to do with anymore. All they wanted was to be left alone, to raise their families and tend their farms and live their lives. And all he cared about at this immediate moment was that Solo's gimmicked record be good enough to fool this glowering bit-pusher into believing it. If it was... The agent whistled under his breath, peering at his reader.
Tarkin's teeth,
he muttered, shaking his head.
Are these energy readings correct?
That's what was there.
Kerub hesitated, but he couldn't resist.
So was it worth breaking security for?
The agent looked up, but it was clear he wasn't really seeing Kerub anymore.
I'd say so, yes,
he said absently, keying his board furiously.
Sure. Just watch it when you head home, and keep with the zigzag. Dismissed!
And that was it. No thank yous, no well dones, no nothing. Just a petty little ubiquitrate agent on dead-end duty at the edge of nowhere, with visions of promotion dancing through his head. But that was okay, Kerub knew as he headed down the corridor. His part was done now, or almost done, and Solo would take it from here. He could go back to Lacey and his brothers and sink back into the quiet anonymity that was all any of them desired. Unless... He grimaced as a thought belatedly struck him. Yes, the ubiquitous agent back there had swallowed the bait in a single eager gulp. But that was no guarantee the military analysts on Bastion, who would take the record apart, would do the same. And it was no guarantee at all that Grand Admiral Thrawn wouldn't see instantly through the scam. If he did, and if Solo was still in Imperial space at the time... He shook his head once to clear it. No, he'd done what they'd wanted, and had risked his own neck to do it. What happened now was in their hands, not his. His part was done. Period. Quickening his pace, he headed toward the docking tunnel where his freighter was berthed. The faster he got out of here and back to his farm, the better. From off to the side, the speaker suddenly crackled.
Solo?
Hastily, Han dropped his feet off the edge of the control board, where they'd been propped, and keyed the comm.
Yeah, I'm here, Kerub,
he said.
You got it?
Yes,
Kerub said.
He sent the droid probe off on Vector 43x15.
Behind Han, the bridge door opened.
Is that Devist?
Lando asked.
Yeah,
Han said, as he punched up a chart.
You sure this is the Vector to Bastion?
It's the direction the probe went. I'm sending you a copy of the recording.
What I meant was, are you sure he was sending it to Bastion?
Han said, as a beep from the board acknowledged receipt of the transmission.
He didn't say anything one way or the other, but from the shining vision of promotion in his eyes, I can't see where else he would have sent it.
How about to the main ubiquitous base at Yagga Minor?
Lando countered.
Isn't that his proper chain of command?
Usually, yes. But matters of immediate military importance go directly to High Command. Your unknown alien ship should come under that heading.
We hope,
Lando muttered.
Besides which, there are military politics involved. Anyone stuck out on a contact station like this is here because the upper echelons have basically written them off. The only way to get out is to impress someone higher up in the military. Again, that means sending it straight to Bastion.
Han lifted his eyebrows at Lando.
Sounds reasonable to me.
I suppose,
Lando said suspiciously, peering with narrowed eyes at the freighters hanging in space outside the Lady Luck's viewport.
So Baron Fell was pretty good with military politics, was he?
Han winced. Whatever Lando's feelings about clones might be, there was no reason to go out of his way to antagonize Carib, especially when the man was trying to help them. Even more especially when they were sitting at the edge of Imperial space within spitting distance of a ubiquitous station.
Carib.
It's all right, Solo,
Carib said, his voice studiously neutral.
Maybe you'll agree now I was right when I talked about this back on Pakrik Minor.
Han winced again. Carib's contention that there was still heavy prejudice against clones in the New Republic.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. My part's done. I'm heading home.
Good luck to you. The freighter curved away from the Lady Luck and flickered with pseudo-motion as it made the jump to light speed.
He's sure in a hurry to get away,
Lando growled.
He's heading home,
Han reminded him, turning his attention back to the chart. A course of 43/15 from the ubiquitous station would put it...
Looks like the Saturnanian system,
Lando said, looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, it does,
Han agreed, nodding.
Funny place to put an Imperial capital,
Lando said, an edge of suspicion still coloring his tone.
Oh, I don't know,
Han said, skimming down the data the Lady Luck's computer had on the place.
It was a sector capital once, so they're probably used to having a bureaucracy underfoot.
Still a long way from the glittering towers of Coruscant, though,
Lando said.
Isn't everything?
Han countered.
Come on, we're wasting time.
Shaking his head, Lando dropped into the pilot's seat.
Sure. Let's just walk into the middle of the Imperial capital. Why not?
Lando, look.
No, it's all right, Han,
Lando said with a tired sigh.
I said I'd do it, and I will. I just wish I didn't have to.
He reached over and keyed the nav computer.
But wishes don't bring you the cards you want. Give Lobot and Mogat a call, will you? And tell them to strap in.
Sure,
Han said, reaching for his own restraints with one hand and going for the comm switcher with the other.
Hey, don't worry. It's gonna work out fine.
Yeah, Lando said. Sure.
No!
Ishori Senator Jik Toksono snarled, slamming a horny-tipped fist down on the table for emphasis.
It is completely out of the question! The Ishori will not accept anything less than full and complete justice for the Kaamasi and the people of the New Republic.
Justice is what we all seek,
Diamalan Senator Parolo Mayatamia countered, his voice the glacial calm of his species.
But
you lie!
Duxono all but screamed, his ears flattened against his head.
The Diamala demand the impossible and refuse to settle for anything else.
Senators, please,
President Ponk Gavrisim cut in, his wings sweeping briefly between the other two as if trying to separate a pair of enraged shockball players.
I'm not asking for a resolution of the Karma situation here and now. All I'm asking...
I know what you are asking,
Duxono snarled.
But justice postponed is too often justice ignored.
He jabbed a finger accusingly toward Mayatamia.
And that is precisely the situation the Diamala are trying to engineer.
The Diamala have every intention of seeing justice served,
Mayatamia said coldly.
But we understand that more urgent matters should take priority.
Thrawn is dead!
Duxono snarled, leaping to his feet as if to physically attack the other.
He is-